The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings, who are entirely responsible for its content. Sorry, guys, you are on your own.
This is the Federal Football Report, a weekly wrap-up of all things burgundy and gold. The Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Here are your hosts, Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings.
Hello and welcome to the Federal Football Report, where we discuss all things burgundy and gold. I'm Kevin Stanfield, flying the plane solo today without Claude Jennings. It seems that Claude Jennings has been drafted for jury duty of all things. Now, we know that Claude recently returned from Las Vegas, and the rumors are out there that this might be somewhat related, but no, Claude is actually on the jury, and he's performing his civic duty, as we all should. So we're going to have to fly the plane solo today and discuss the most recent defeat of the Burgundy and Gold at the hands of the Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson by the score of 27-17. Remember when our quarterback used to run around like that? Now, in Claude's absence, I decided that we would get our Burgundy and Gold beat reporter from WTOP Radio, George Wallace, to sit in and discuss this game. Turns out that George was in San Francisco following the Washington Nationals. Now, I have no problem, as much as I love radio, I have no problem with doing this myself, but I really think for you, the listener, that it would be better if we did have a co-host so we can kick some ideas around so it won't be my own biased opinion. And I received a call from a friend who wanted to come in to participate and help me out here, and I didn't think it would work at first, but you know what? He's a good guy. You know him. You love him. I know him. I love him. So, ladies and gentlemen, here as my co-host for today is the President of the United States, Mr. Barack Obama. Thank you for joining us, Mr. President, and I'm proud to say that you're a big fan of the Federal Football Report.
Well, truth be told, we do go back a little ways, sir. We've worked together on a couple of projects that the public isn't privy to.
I felt very confident and comfortable in our working relationship. I think what did evolve was a friendship.
And we appreciate that, sir. And that's why we here on the Federal Football Report feel an obligation somewhere to give you our best, because you do that for us.
It is you who make the state of our union strong.
Well, you know, we do what we can, Mr. President. Now, you've been following this team from the very beginning. You know, there's been a sort of a quarterback controversy around town that RG3 might not be the guy to run this offense. And it's possible that Kirk Cousins might be better suited to run this Gruden offense. What do you think about that?
It's possible if it's real. And, you know, I think it's certainly a positive development when this is what we've been asking for, not just over the last week or the last month, but for the last couple of years.
Now, one of the problems I've been having with the Gruden offense is they don't take advantage of the skills of a all-pro running back in Alfred Morris. For instance, he only carried the ball 13 times for 29 yards against the Seahawks. What do you feel about this imbalance between throwing the ball as opposed to running more?
We can support them from the air, but ultimately we're going to need a strong ground game.
Now, it's no secret I've been very, very hard on this defensive unit, from the coach and his new unshackled defense to the lack of basic football skills that the defensive side of the ball is showing. And I'd be curious as to how you feel about that.
As for our defense,
there's no excuse for it. And I take full responsibility for making sure it gets fixed ASAP. We are working overtime to improve it every day.
Well, that's kind of surprising to hear that you've taken such a personal involvement with the defense of this team, or lack thereof. So have you had an opportunity to actually speak to the team? And if so, what did you tell the defense?
I want to work with you, but you got to give me something. You got to try to deliver something, anything. They don't do anything.
Hey, I agree with you, sir, but I mean, you know, it is only a football game. Don't you think you're a little rough on these guys?
I'm not going to apologize for trying to do something while they're doing nothing.
Now, one of the more troubling reports after this game came from Mike Jones of the Washington Post. Now, Mike reported after the game that a lot of the players in the locker room were laughing and joking, like this loss was like inconsequential to them. And there was only a couple of guys, Alfred Morris and Darrell Young, and they were really genuinely upset by the game. Now, does that bother you that they think that just playing football is like fun and no matter what the outcome?
It'd be so much more fun if they said, you know what, let's do something together. They were more interested in you and the issues that you're talking about, then we'd be doing a lot better.
Well, Mr. President, I can't tell you how much of a thrill this has been for me having you here on the Federal Football Report, and I hope you enjoyed yourself as well.
I just wanted to have a chance to publicly say thank you because it has been a great collaboration.
You got that right. And we'll be right back with more of the Federal Football Report right here on Federal News Radio.
Now back to the Federal Football Report with Claude and Kevin, two of the best in the business. By the way, I am getting paid for this, right?
All right, welcome back to the Federal Football Report. I'm Kevin Stanfield. I'm joined now by our producer extraordinaire, Sean McCauley of Federal News Radio and the In Depth with Francis Rose program, but right now, who is our NFL expert. Now, Sean, I tweeted during the game, I want you to know this, that the Redskins defensive coach, Jim Hazlitt, had a plan. His plan was to let Russell Wilson run as much as he wanted to in the first half, run all over the field, gain as much yardage as he could, thereby exhausting himself. And that way he'd be effective for the second half. And it almost worked. It almost worked because they were playing very sloppy football in the second half. But how amazed were you that it seemed like it was so easy for Russell Wilson to just run at will on these guys?
That's a great question because that is something I kept asking myself and my friend who was watching it with me. It seemed very easy for him to start running wherever he wanted. Well, not wherever he wanted, but there were always giant holes in the middle or the right side of the field. You know, you got to give Russell Wilson some credit, too. He picked the spots where he knew he could run, and he would get good runs out of them. So you've got one play where he didn't get the touchdown. It was in the first half of the game, and he shook a tackle.
Yeah.
He had some yards after contact. You know, not many quarterbacks are going to try to do that, but he got it done. There was that one. It was a scramble, so he didn't get the run, but he had that amazing throw on the left side of the field. Do you remember that?
Oh, I couldn't forget it.
Oh, yeah. It's seared in our memories forever, yeah, sadly. Yeah. So you got to give him some credit, but, you know, if that's Jim Hazlitt's plan to let him run, what are you thinking? Like, what is the strategic benefit of doing that? Letting him get tired?
Well, yeah, that's it, man. You figure he flew all the way from Seattle, and boy, his arms are tired.
But his legs sure aren't.
His legs weren't. Yeah, that's true. And what was amazing to me was, hey, look, I didn't make it into the pros. I didn't make it into college. It was rough at high school. But there were certain basic things that we were taught on defense. And I was an offensive ball player, but still, when you play defense, there were certain things. And the thing that came to mind at first was the word contain. Containment. We were always taught, keep the guy with the ball on the inside of the field. And they would break it down to us. Don't let him get to the sideline. Keep him inside the numbers because you have help when you chase him back that way. If you try to use your speed against his speed, guess what? He might be a little bit faster than you. And I saw no attempt by Kerrigan, by Arakpo. There was no attempt to keep him inside the field. It's like the possibility that this guy might run wasn't in their head. So that's why I figured this must be their plan. Their plan must be to let him run because it was so easy for him.
That makes sense. There was another aspect of the defense I thought was lacking. My friend pointed this out. We had no middle linebacker that was acting as the spy. So
right.
Everyone had a man. Excuse me. Everybody had a man. And in some cases, two, it was a double coverage, but that left the middle of the field wide open because there were no middle linebackers watching Russell Wilson. And that's what gave him these huge opportunities to run. And it wasn't even just that. It was bad coverages. There were a couple times when Biggers, Merriweather, and Breland, not Biggers, Riley Jr., there were two receivers in one spot, and they would pick the guy going down the field, and they would leave the guy that was slightly up the field wide open, and he would get the ball. And you could just see them having to flip around in order to come back and tackle them. And to me, that just seems like you're not paying attention to where the ball is, for starters. And then by doing that, you don't know where the ball is going. You're just picking a guy and hoping that that's where the ball is going to end up. And that's just poor planning. That's lack of execution. And frankly, I think it reflects on Hazlitt. A lot of people don't like him, and they don't like the schemes he calls. And I'm starting to see why that is now, because they didn't seem like they were ready. They didn't seem like they really knew what was going on. And that has to, at some point, reflect on the coach. He didn't have them prepared for the game.
You know, if they weren't ready, they weren't prepared, I suggest they all chip in, throw in $79 and buy the NFL package on DirecTV, because they can see all the games, and you can see that Russell Wilson has that capability of running. You can see the speed of a Percy Harvin. You can see the strength of a Marshawn Lynch. You can see that if you just, like, watch a game. But like you said, they seem so ill-prepared and actually surprised by what was going on, because they made adjustments, but I think their adjustments were more due to the mistakes that the Seahawks were making later in the game. The fact that Percy Harvin had 3 touchdowns called back because of penalties, that shows fatigue or lack of preparation. These are Super Bowl champions. I'm not going to say they weren't prepared. I'm going to put it more on fatigue and the brilliant plan to let Russell Wilson just run all over the field. But see, the flaw in that plan was you get tired too from running him, chasing him all over the field. And the thing that I've always disliked about the Hazlitt defense and defensive scheme is it's too easy to read. The other team always seems to know where to go with the ball. They figure it out. They can look at one guy, whatever their key is, and pretty much they don't score for broken plays. These things look well designed. When they score, they throw a touchdown pass, the guy is wide open, right? It's not, you know, the middle of the field is like, it's like a free for all. I mean, it's like whoever wants yardage, whoever wants to score, just send them down the middle of the field in the Burgundy and goal defense, and you go and score.
Do you think perhaps maybe the plans are just too elaborate?
That could be it. He is so far ahead of his time that these guys haven't caught up to it. Let me throw this theory by you. I'm looking at the talent around the league. If you watch any other game, you can see young talent, young up-and-coming talent. And if this is really a rebuilding year for the Burgundy and Gold, and I mean, all practical purposes, this is a rebuilding year. How do we rebuild this team? Do we, like, bring guys along slowly? Because I'm noticing if a guy can play in the NFL, except for the quarterback position, he can play as a rookie. If you're good enough to start in the NFL, guys rarely work their way up into the starting position. If you're good enough to play, they'll put you on the field instantly. And that's why if you look at guys like David Amerson, Breland, Amerson sort of like inherited the job as a starting corner opposite D'Angelo Hall. Breland was forced into it when D. Hall got hurt. But my thing is, if Breland was good enough to start, he would have been starting somewhere in the NFL right now. If Perry Riley was good enough to start, he would have started as a rookie, and they waited like 2 years to start him. The same with the middle linebacker. You know, if they were good enough to start, they would have been started. Do you think guys can get better as they go along? You think they can be taught to be better football players?
I think that's the common wisdom, isn't it? That even with a position like the quarterback, sometimes it benefits them just to sit on the sidelines and watch so they can see what's going on. Yeah, I mean, these people are coming in at, they're 23, 22 years old, if they're really good, if they're 22. And you're young. You know, I've always heard that the perfect combination of both physical attributes and mental attributes, the golden age for that is in the 28-year range. So that's when your mind is wise enough that you have enough experience to know what to expect, where to be, and how to execute, but your body is still spry enough in order to do what your mind tells it to do. So, yes, I do believe, to answer your question, that they do get better over time. I think Amerson's getting better. I think he's better than he was last year. He seems to he knows where he needs to be. I don't see a lot of blown coverages from him. You know, but then sometimes you may be thrown at Bakari Rambo, who had plenty of opportunities to learn on the fly, granted, but he also had an offseason to prepare. Hazlitt himself was gushing over how much he's improved, but that didn't translate onto the field. So maybe there's a difference between what you're learning on the practice squad or what you're reading in the playbook and actually turning it into something on the field. You know, RG3 is kind of the reverse. Supposedly he practices pretty badly, but when he comes out to play the game, he does better. So there is that little bit of a dynamic. So I would agree that if, you know, if the argument is that you get better over time, I think that's true, definitely.
Well, I don't know how much time they plan on giving these guys, but I do suggest that we start scouring the combine reports, the scouting reports, and see what players are projected first rounders for next year. I mean, I don't want to bail on the season yet, but we're going to have to get better. And I think via trade is not the way to go. As much as I love RG3, I was totally opposed to the move, the trade that brought him here, because you mortgaged your future. And right now we're feeling that. We're feeling the holes that would have been filled by some of those draft picks, and we're starting to feel that now. If we had used them wisely, I mean, I still think Arakpo, Kerrigan, and I think Murphy, I think they're good picks. I think in time, and with the proper usage, these guys can be a defense for the ages. It's the ingredients, and it's the cook, and it's the cookware, and it's the oven. Which one do you throw out first?
Well, let me point this out. This is from my experience working at Federal News Radio, but basically it's investing 101. It's the concept that you don't put all of your eggs in one basket. That's a terrible way to invest, because if it fails hard, and you lose everything you were hoping for. And that's exactly what they did with RG3. They put all of their eggs in one basket, and it's not coming out the way they wanted it to.
So you're saying that RG3 is pretty much like the BlackBerry of the NFL? It was hot for a minute, but the rest of the market's caught up with it?
That's actually a good point. You know, the BlackBerry is still alive and well in the federal government, even though no one else uses it. So RG3, in that sense, is the BlackBerry because he's alive and well in Washington, but no one else seems to care. I actually have another question for you, though. What do you think of the offense? Because at one point during the game, me and my friend were the next way we were figuring out how to generate any happiness from the game was that we would try to guess how far back we were on the third down. So we would hope for third and two, but then sometimes we ended up with third and three, and that was kind of a disappointment. But that's where we ended up grasping for any sort of optimism.
I'm concerned that they had a third and one deep in their own territory, and wisely, I thought they chose to run the ball, but they had absolutely no push on the offensive line. I think that's a carryover from Mike Shanahan and the type of offensive player and the type of football player he wanted. His players, even though they're 300 pounds, are more finesse guys because of that zone blocking scheme that they have. They're used to influencing guys from side to side. But when it comes down to you needing a yard and these guys having to go right up the middle, they just don't have that. It's not in them, which really disturbs me, because I feel like a guy who makes $1 million a year, if you ask him for a yard, he should be able to give you a yard. It doesn't matter who's in front of him. All you need is a yard. Give me a yard. And these guys aren't equipped to do that for some reason. That bothers me. You got to love DeSean Jackson, because I saw DeSean in Philly when he wasn't getting when they were winning and he wasn't getting the ball enough, he was complaining. But here he's keeping his mouth shut and he's just quietly doing his job. He's doing the best he can. I'm concerned about Pierre Garçon, though. I'm not
only
seeing
two
a lot
catches.
Not a lot of separation there for some reason. He's not as open, as wide open as he was last year. I don't know if there's an injury problem, if it's a ego thing with DeSean being there. Andre Roberts is trying hard. And what is up with Jason Reed? Was he active? Was he playing? Is he suited? Is he in town? What is happening there?
That's a great question, because I think the first incompletion was the first pass attempt, and it was to a semi-wide open Logan Paulson.
Yeah, how about that?
Who promptly dropped it.
True. I tweeted at one point during the game, Cousins, who I saw, he missed a couple of them that Cousins looked like he was throwing to a gopher in one of those, but in fairness to Cousins, the gopher was open. Right? You know, so, you know, the offense is just question mark after question mark after question mark. And Claude asks the question all the time, the identity of this team. What is the identity? What is the identity of a Jay Gruden offense? Is it run and gun? Is it ground and pound? What exactly, what is it? I mean, he had the benefit of A.J. Green and in Cincinnati and not really an outstanding Cedric Benson for a while, but that offense didn't really have an identity either. And you saw that when it came to playoff time, they didn't know what way to, you know, which way to go. They had nothing that they could just hang their hat on. And that seems to be what's developing here. It's like the no name. Oh, it's a generic, you know, like you go shopping and you got a can with no label on it. You don't know what's in it. It might be a good value, but you don't know what's in it until, you know, you get inside.
Right. I think the receiving core is actually pretty good. You know, Andre Roberts was a big pickup. He's been a huge help to the team. Granted, when the ball doesn't sail through his hands on a wide open pass, but, you know, we'll forgive him. He's done plenty in order to prove himself. Excuse me. Pierre Garçon. He's a tough runner. He was the league leader in catches last year. He set the Redskins' single-season record for catches. He only had two, and apparently his style is pretty nasty because Richard Sherman was complaining after the game that he was pulling his hair.
Now, if Richard Sherman is complaining about something, I've always wondered about that, man. I mean, it's there. Isn't that like part of the game, part of the uniform, right? You know, if your nose
is hanging
out.
That's what I've always heard, yes. If it's something that can be grabbed, it's fair game.
Right.
If it's a tackle. So, you know, that's...
And I'm sure that's not the first guy that had pulled Sherman's hair. But Garçon, he caught all those passes last year, and, you know, that's not a fluke. I mean, this is the NFL. Even the worst cornerback can stop at least one or two passes, but he was pretty much unstoppable last year. Now is... I don't know his age, color. He's not that old, right? And like I said, it could be an injury thing that I know he did come into camp with some hamstring issues. He's just not as wide open as he was last year. And I think because of the inexperience of a Kirk Cousins. And RG3 would do it sometimes, too. He wouldn't throw to a guy who was partially covered. And the guy would have to be wide open. Unfortunately, Kirk is missing some of those wide open guys. Now, if there's any bright spot here, I would say that these are non-division games, and there's still a chance. I mean, you know, there's still a chance once we've lost one division game, but, you know, hey, the meat of the season is coming up, and what kind of chance do you give these guys, having seen the Eagles once, having seen the Giants once? Excuse me, they lost two division games. I'm not as optimistic as I thought. What kind of chance do you have? You give these guys looking forward?
Well, let's just say, for hypothetical sake, that the identity of our team, at least on the offensive side, is Kirk Cousins. Because I think that would be the wisest thing to do if I was a game planner, because if you try to do it through Alfred Morris, one, you're going to run the tires out on him a lot sooner than you need to, and two, teams can plan for it. Yeah. So let's just say, for hypothetical sake, that it's Kirk Cousins' offense, and that's the offensive identity. That said, not confident, because I don't think anybody around the country, if they thought, oh, well, let's see what Kirk Cousins can do as the head of our offense, I don't think anybody would look at that situation and go, okay, that sounds like a great idea. So, you know, they got the Cardinals coming in, and, you know, they just lost, but they're a good team. And, you know, Patrick Peterson is, you know, poor man's Richard Sherman. So it's going to be a tough one, and frankly, I don't think they're going to win. Before the season started, my prediction was 6 wins. I think they'd be lucky to get that. And so on the plus side, that leaves us with a pretty good drafting opportunity next year, which is something we haven't had, despite the horrible record last year. So at least there's something to look forward to.
Thank you for the optimism. He's Sean McCauley. I'm Kevin Stanfield. Not as happy as I was 5 minutes ago. But we'll be right back with a look at the NFC East right here on the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Welcome back to the special abbreviated edition of the Federal Football Report here on Federal News Radio. Kevin Stanfield here with you. Claude Jennings on jury duty. Let's take a look at the NFC East, where the Burgundy and Gold hold the distinction of being the only team that did not win. That's not looking too good. Now, they have a lot of division games left, so if there is hope, we can take solace in that. But the Dallas Cowboys, looking pretty good for a team that everyone wrote off at the beginning of the year. They beat the Houston Texans in overtime by the score of 20-17. I told you guys, Dallas has a lot of weapons on offense. I know there were some questions about Tony Romo coming off the back surgery, but, you know, that's where they have doctors, and you got to believe that the NFL has some of the best medical care in the whole world. So the Cowboys are still making their presence known, as are the Philadelphia Eagles, who, despite all the injuries to their offensive line, are still running Chip Kelly's offense to near perfection. They defeated the St. Louis Rams by the score of 34-28. And the New York Giants, I believe if you go back to the videotape, well, in this case, it's radio audio tape, of our first show, when the Giants look so putrid, I said that the Giants always start out like this. They always threaten to fire the coach, and they end up winning the Super Bowl. I'm not saying they're Super Bowl bound, but the Giants are looking like the Giants of old. The amazing thing to me is they're not doing it with a consistent running attack. People write off Eli Manning all the time, and he did have a bad year last year, but he seems like he's playing like the Eli Manning of old. They defeated the Atlanta Falcons by the score of 30-20. And the interesting thing about that, the Falcons were leading in that game in the fourth quarter. Then their defense just stepped up. The defensive line of the Giants started playing football, and the Falcons could not handle it. So you got the Cowboys, the Giants, and the Eagles all winning. Now, that puts the Eagles and the Cowboys on the top of the division with identical 4-1 records. The Giants one game behind at 3-2, and not too far behind are the Burgundy and Gold at 1-4. Next up on the schedule, the Burgundy and Gold will travel to Arizona to take on a rejuvenated Cardinal team. While two of the best matchups in the NFL this coming weekend involve the NFC East, with the Cowboys traveling to Seattle to take on the Seahawks and Russell Wilson, and the Giants traveling down 95 South to Philadelphia in a game that's going to have some serious implications in the NFC East. Well, that's going to do it for this abbreviated edition of the Federal Football Report. I'm Kevin Stanfield, and hopefully Claude Jennings will not be sequestered next week. If so, it doesn't matter. We're going to bring you another outstanding edition of the Federal Football Report right here on Federal News Radio.